We're exploring the roots of an old world activity, cross-country skiing, and its history in Wisconsin and Minnesota. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So the story goes, in the winter of 1841, a Norwegian immigrant at the Rock Prairie Settlement in southern Wisconsin strapped on wooden boards, set off across the snow toward Beloit to buy flour, leaving tracks that perplexed his neighbors. What on earth? What creature could it be? It was the dawn of Nordic skiing in the Midwest. Are you a cross-country skier, classic or skate skiing? What do you love about it? 800-642-1234. Ryan Rogers' new book, it traces the ebb and flow of Nordic skiing in our region. It's called Winter's Children, A Celebration of Nordic Skiing. And Ryan, an avid skier in Duluth. Ryan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, this is going to be so much fun. And I have to say, the pictures in your book are just so incredible. And I would imagine just trying to gather all of that historical, you know, all the pictures, just that was certainly a challenge.
It got more difficult once the pandemic set in and all the county archives closed, yes.
I would imagine. Well, let's start with something I just hinted at, and this little ski adventure, and it was Gulik Laugen, who was living in southern Wisconsin at the time, and went on a little ski trip. Tell us about what happened.
Well, he did as he would have done in Norway. He used his skis to get someplace in the winter, and the tracks he left were so unusual to his neighbors that their imaginations ran wild, and they assumed some strange sort of monster was roaming the prairie that covered the landscape then.
And where did he get these wooden boards? How did he get this idea? How was it planted?
You know, there's not a lot of context with that anecdote, but that's a good question. He most likely made his own skis, since that was something people did then. You couldn't buy them. He either made them or brought them with from Norway.
Well, let's go back to Norway and that region. Who invented skiing? How did it get here? What is that? Give us a flavor for that history.
Well, nobody is clear where skiing originated. It's ancient. It's thousands of years old. It could have come from northern Scandinavia. It could have come from the Altai Mountains of what's now China. And it didn't reach the United States or North America until the Norwegians brought it here in the mid-19th century.
How quickly did cross-country skiing take off then in these areas with the arrival of the immigrants? What were those early days like?
It did not catch on very quickly. And in pockets of Norwegian settlements, I'm sure people were out skiing on a regular basis. It's just how they got around in the winter time. Skiing as a sport, even in Norway, didn't really develop until the mid-19th century. And there were some ski leagues that sprang up, well, a ski league that sprung up in the Twin Cities in western Wisconsin in the late 1880s, but that didn't last long, although a new ski league replaced it in the first decade of the 20th century that still exists today.
But ski jumping was booming in those early days when cross-country skiing was a bit harder of a sell. What was the attraction to jumping?
Well, ski jumping is kind of the original thrill sport. And yes, those ski leagues I mentioned were based in jumping. That's what attracted the spectators, is nobody really wanted to watch cross-country but jumping, on the other hand, was fun stuff to watch. Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's this one character, Mikkel Hemmestveit, who immigrates, gets off the boat, walks into the St. Paul Winter Carnival and wins ski jumping. Can you give us a sense of who he was in the ski world in those early days?
So Mikkel Hemmestveit was the mentee of Sondre Norheim, who is perhaps the world's first ski star in Norway. He was from Telemark, and he would come to Christiania, as Oslo was called then, and win the tournaments. And they were neighbors. They lived in cottages on a hillside, and Mikko learned to ski from Sondre, and he was perhaps the best skier on the planet at that time, but it wasn't a lucrative posting. So he still emigrated to the US to try his hand at farming. And he was the star of the early ski league that sprang up here.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ryan Rogers, author of Winter's Children. Are you a Nordic skier? Tell us how you got started, who taught you, and what you enjoy about the trails. 800-642-1234. There's this really tragic but touching moment where Mikkel and I believe it's the brother Torgis, who were always, very close in competition, 1-2-2-1. And they ski jumped holding hands in exhibition. And this is after so much tragedy struck their lives. They've lost their wives. They've lost an infant son. What can you tell us more about this moment and that relationship?
They had this sort of brief, brilliant era where they were ski stars in their new community and everybody loved them. And they were, you know, they were both living in the same town. Yes, then illness struck, and Torjus's wife died in childbirth, and the infant died. And then the panic of 1893 derailed the young ski league. And that put a kibosh on their winning days of the tournaments. And Mikkel went back to Norway, never to return. And Torjus settled in Western Minnesota, where he ran a farm the rest of his life.
Let's take a call. Nancy is joining us from Hayward. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. I know you want to talk about the Berkey, so go for it.
Good morning, Ryan. This is Nancy Bauer, your coach from Anoka High School.
Oh, my goodness.
So hi there, Nancy. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I was aware of this program. I wanted to make a comment, and I know this is out of context on your timeline for your interview, but I thought I had to call in early and wait in line for an hour to speak. Here we are. The American Birkebeiner office in Hayward, downtown Hayward, has a ski museum, and I wanted the listeners to be aware of that. It's a great way to kind of browse back the history of just the Birkebeiner, but it includes all skiing.
What do you love about that museum, Nancy? And what do you love about the Berkey?
Oh, I love the people. There's so many. It's just, I'm getting teary-eyed. It's a wonderful reunion of friends that are all in loving skiing and enjoying winter, and we've all found a way to make it our friend, and it's a great celebration of life.
And people who do it as this annual pilgrimage year after year, I think it's Birchleggers who do it 20-some years, and then the 60.
20.
Yeah, and then the Uberleggers who are, is that 60? 60 or
no,
more?
No, it's over 30.
Over 30. Okay.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
but
still, that's a lot of years of being committed to doing this race. Ryan, what can you tell us about the Berkey and that tradition?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, as you can see from Nancy here, it's really a pinnacle of many people's years. It's this, you know, it's this massive race. It's, the starting lines are just thronged with people. And yeah, I mean, you have these folks who have been skiing it for 30 years or more. I mean, it's a difficult race. It's to, you know, to do that for 30 years. I mean, that takes some serious commitment.
If you're just joining us, we have writer and Nordic skier Ryan Rogers, a new book out on the history of cross-country skiing in our parts, 388 pages. It's called Winter's Children. What are your favorite parts of the ski tradition? Are there some tributes to cross-country skiing in your community? Have you made your own skis? Tell us about the process. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ryan Rogers here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring cross-country skiing and how it evolved in the Midwest. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Norwegians had a profound definition for skiing. It's about bettering yourself, your community, communing with nature, creating benefits that go beyond exercise. So let's hear the Danish pronunciation. Thank you, YouTube.
Idræt is the Danish word for sports.
Idræt. What does Nordic skiing mean to you? Have you raced the Berkey? 800-642-1234. Author Ryan Rogers' book is called Winter's Children, Tracing Nordic Skiing in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and he's here for the hour. So there is this tension around that word, idræt, and what it really means and how, you know, people from Norway thought of it, how people who immigrated thought about it. Can you kind of set us up with a little bit of what that tension was like?
Well, 100 years ago, when the ski jumping scene was really taking off, when it was becoming quite a popular sport, far, far more so than it is today, the Norwegian purists, many of the folks who had been born in Norway and emigrated here, they thought it was, the sport was getting too showboaty. There was too much emphasis on distances, too much emphasis on prize money, and they wanted to eliminate that and get back to the pure origins of the sport, where it wasn't about oneself. It was about, it was more of a holistic thing. As you said, it was about not just making yourself more healthy, but making your community more healthy by extension, and as a means of connecting with nature.
Yeah, there was this Ack Holter, I believe it was, who was really not on this idea about whether jumpers, you know, should win cash prizes, and really wanted to push honoring them with trophies and patches, and money would be out of the question through this ideal. How did he try to push the sport to kind of purify it and keep money out of the competition?
Well, there was a National Ski Association annual meeting, and I don't recall the year. It was the only year the national tournament was held in Ashland, Wisconsin. And Axel Holter suggested to all these jumpers gathered that maybe they should forego their cash prizes, and instead of receiving a nice chunk of money, they would get a nice little patch.
And sorry.
It didn't go over very well. I mean, most of these jumpers were blue-collar guys. They were bricklayers and carpenters and, you know, chauffeurs.
They risking their lives, by the way, when they're doing these jumps.
Yeah, so I thought Holter was a really interesting character. So I can see it from both ways. He didn't want his pure sport sullied, but then again, he wasn't necessarily being in tune with the needs of the actual jumpers.
But he's really interesting here because he also founded, I think, the ski club in Ashland, and women and girls being allowed to ski. That was different and new, wasn't it?
It was, yes. And I mean, you see examples of it every now and then. Mikkel Hemmingsvedt, he encouraged women to join the ski club he founded in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. And this was during a time where women were, well, girls were permitted to ski as kids, but once they grew up, it was frowned upon, and in competition, it was a non-starter.
Let's take another call now with a youth ski coach in Delafield. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call, and Ryan, what a great topic. I could not be a part of this topic. Yes, I'm a ski coach. I'll make it brief. Ski coach, assistant coach in Delafield, Wisconsin, but largely a part of the Lapham Peak Ski Club and the Peak community with our fantastic ski park, our hub at Lapham Peak. And I'm just calling in to show my enthusiasm and just kudos to Ryan and for you all bringing this topic to light, because yes, Nordic skiing is incredible. It's a great, great fitness. It's beautiful. You're immersed in the woods. But what I see for our youth, especially in today's day and age, it's such a developmental, socially connected experience that are just contributing to kids being better contributors to society and physically healthy and just more connected. And I can't tell you the countless times that I've seen moments of growth and connectedness. And, you know, we have a ski club here with 90 kids from kindergarten to fifth grade every Monday night learning how to ski under the lights at Lapham Peak. State high school champs, We have successes, but I think the successes are mainly the community building, giving back, and the friendships. That's what I take away personally.
When did you get involved with coaching?
I got involved with coaching when I moved to Delafield about 7 years ago, just a lover of the sport, lover of working with youth, and I could not sit back and just look from the sidelines. It looked so fun, so I've been involved with Peak for 5 years. My son skis. My greatest friends are in the ski community now, and it's just really refreshing, and we see so many breakthroughs with kids who are maybe not interested in the intimidating nature of team sports in the traditional sense, you know, but want to challenge themselves in different ways. And I'm telling you, cross-country skiing is a challenge. and it is.
Yes,
it's
is.
Beautiful, but it's challenging. And so I think it's the perfect combination of a great sport, but just as much necessary as a great community and social connection.
Oh, Eric, so glad you called in. Ryan, how about that youth skiing scene?
Well, I mean, that sounds right there like a modern interpretation of the Idrett, what Eric was describing there. Mm. But a great thing about skiing is, you know, you can literally ski from the ages of 2 until 92. I think more parents are seeing how it is a healthy sport, and also how kids are not likely to, you know, tear their ACL or get a concussion cross-country skiing.
Well, you know that 96-year-old out there is just rolling your eyes at you. So.
I hope so.
We're talking with Ryan Rogers, author of Winter's Children, a celebration of Nordic skiing. You know, Eric brings up the youth scene, and it just got me thinking about the Stillwater High School team needing 2 school buses to transport the team, and everyone could still find a home on the ski team. They were seen, and I just think about that camaraderie and what Stillwater was able to foster. There were so many students wanting to be on the team that even, you know, the administration was like, you know, 2 buses, that's getting pricey. I really like that anecdote, Ryan.
And the Stillwater team was sort of set the paradigm for the giant ski teams that are around today that emphasize participation as much as winning races. And that's, you know, you don't get that in a lot of sports.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting too that if one student missed a practice, that they were asked about, hey, why weren't you there? That even though the team was, or is so big, that individuals still matter.
Oh yeah, and of course you're talking about Bill Simpson there, nudging his reluctant 8th grade skier Chris Hansen, who would go on to win the Minnesota State meet. I forget how many times, multiple times. And then, of course, she was Jesse Diggins' mentor more recently at Stillwater.
Yes, and we're going to talk more about Jesse Diggins. But let's take another call now. Lynn is joining us from Racine. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good morning. I have been a cross-country skier almost all of my life. I'm in my 60s. I've never really learned technique. I'm an alpine skier, and I have taken lessons, but I hear you talk about kids' lessons and kids' camps. Where do I go at this age to really learn some technique? I love the sport. I love that I can go on my lunch hour. I love that I can go by myself. But these little hills and turning at the bottom, they're now becoming kind of an obstacle for me.
Thank you, Lynn. Ryan, what would you suggest?
Well, if you have a local ski club, you could try that, or, you know, just even watching YouTube videos. It depends if you're classicing or skating. I mean, skating seems difficult at first, but once you get the motions down, it's pretty easy. Whereas classical, it's easy to do on an introductory basis, but refining the technique is more complicated than it seems.
Yes, and I mean, classical is so beautiful, and you're in those tracks, and those skis are parallel, but that skate skiing motion, which I'm a skate skier, I really caught on to that because I had the figure skating background. It seemed very natural to me to move over to that type of movement. And skate skiing, that's what I learned in your book, relatively newer on the horizon, hasn't been around that long.
No, that's right. It has been around for forever, but used in competition. Mm-hmm. Nobody had thought to do that until Bill Koch started doing it in the World Cup races one year and shocked everyone by winning a race skate skiing.
We're going to talk about Bill Koch in a moment. Author Ryan Rogers, our guide to the history and significance of cross-country skiing in the Midwest, ties to its Norwegian heritage. Who taught you to ski? Were you like me on the cross-country ski team in high school? Did you continue skiing after your teenage years? And what do you do when there's not enough snow or conditions are lousy? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Ryan Rogers after a news update on the Ideas Network. I love cross-country skiing, and we're exploring its roots in Wisconsin and the Midwest here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Bill Koch is an icon for U.S. Nordic ski racing, and he elevated skate skiing, as we were talking about. First American to win an Olympic cross-country medal in 76. He had a long conversation with Toco USA in 2020, and he said he lives for skiing every day.
Even when there's no snow, every time I hike, every time I go out anywhere, I've always got my poles. You know, they're part of my body. And if I'm not skiing, I'm still in my head. I'm still skiing.
Who taught you to cross country ski? What are your earliest memories? 800-642-1234. Ryan Rogers' new book is called Winter's Children. It's a tour through the history of the sport in the Midwest. And he's here for the hour. Let's bring on another caller. Paul is joining us from Sealy this morning. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Let me just start by saying, Mina Fofedra Baberkabiner, and I'll explain that in a minute. I live here in Sealy and I've completed 20 Birkebeiners. I like getting outside because of the fresh air, and it just feels good when you're out there and you do meet a lot of really wonderful people. I've also groomed ski trails, well, not now, but I did for like over 30 years. So it was always fun to play in the snow and be a part of it. But one of the reasons I really enjoy it, I guess, is my comment there interprets to my ancestors were Birkebeiner. Mm. We were able to trace our family back to the original Birkebeiners.
Wow.
So it's kind of a part of my life and it's in the blood.
Oh, that is an amazing story. Ryan, what do you make of that?
It's a famous story. That's pretty cool to be able to trace one's ancestry back that far. And we're talking about the 13th century.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, with the Birkebeiner, there is the story about the having this, event in Norwegian history involving an infant king. And they actually play out this event at the Birke each year with, wooden skis, and they're dressed in costume. Can you tell us a little bit about what went on here with the story?
Well, The story goes way back to the early 1200s. Norway was in the midst of this long civil war between the wealthier beglers who owned land and the Birkebeiners. And Birkebeiner means birchlegger, which was intended as a slur toward them from the beglers, saying that they were so poor they wore birch leggings. But the Birkebeiners, they co-opted the term for themselves in good rebel fashion. And in 1205, two of them skied their young king to safety through the mountains of Norway. And the king, King Haakon, became he enjoyed a long reign in Norway, prospered during his long reign.
So how did the Birke here in Wisconsin get started in 73 with 35 skiers and 45 kilometers from Hayward to Telemark? How did that all get started?
Well, Tony Wise, really, really interesting guy from Hayward. He had started a downhill ski resort in the 1940s as a lot of people did. He was a GI. He had been during World War II, and like a lot of other GIs, he was introduced to the downhill culture in Europe, and he came home and he started up his downhill ski resort. And a little later on, he decided that he was going to get into cross country skiing, that would be the way to go. Telmark wasn't, you know, one Olympic skier, Billy Kidd, said it's the only ski hill he knows of where the resort is bigger than the hill. And so the terrain proved to be more conducive for cross country skiing. And his, Tony Weiss's grandmother was from Reina, I'm not sure which way to say it, but from Norway, which is where the Birkebeiner is, the Norwegian Birkebeiner. And so he named it after his own heritage, as did he name the resort Telemark after where he was from.
Noteworthy that Telemark Lodge in Hayward was torn down last year.
Yeah, I mean, it was in pretty rough shape. It'd been moldering there for a while, although I see the American Birkebeiner Foundation has a pretty ambitious land conservation plan in place right now. They're preserving the property and mm-hmm. you know, for ski trails and for the natural habitat. So that's pretty great.
Let's go to Lane in Superior. Hi, Lane.
Hello. I wanted to call in and comment that my father and a bit of my grandmother teach me to ski when I was like 3, 4, 5 years old in Lake Wissota State Park, where I grew up. And I've skied the Berkey with my father for the last 16 years, and I'm 37 now, so I've been doing it for a huge portion of my life. It's something that brings us all together year after year. Since I'm a bit older now, my life has taken me away from my nuclear family. It's something that always brings us back together in Hayward and Cable.
Oh my goodness! Do you train for it? How do you get ready for it?
Well, I've lived in many different places. I lived in Texas for a bit, and I had to train just by going to find the nearest hill and trying to imitate classic skiing or skate skiing. And I'd get some cars that would stop and give me funny looks because it's not like normal running when I try to emulate it. But now that I'm back up north, I go out to the ski trails all the way from the ABR trails in Michigan to up the shoreline to all the different places that have the great skiing on the skinnyski.com. I go there and check out their website and try to find out where the trails are good. And I try to bring friends with me as well.
Oh, that's really neat. And trails really at your disposal now that you're in the Superior area. And Ryan, you're in Lane's neck of the woods as well. Where do you like to ski, Ryan?
Oh, there's a wealth of places up here. After Hours over in Superior is a really nice trail near the Brule River. I go to Lester Park. That's just 2-3 miles from my house. Corky Nordic, that's a short drive away. Duluth's got a ton of great trails. Piedmont, Magny Snively, over by Spirit Mountain, there are a bunch there.
Lane, how about those recommendations?
Oh, yeah. I haven't been to Corky yet, but I've been to all the others. I actually did ABR here just Sunday after New Year's when it was below zero. I was one of the only people out there, but I had to double bundle up, and I think I had 3 layers of long underwear on. But, yeah, I have not had a bad experience at any of the trail systems here. The volunteers all over the Upper Midwest are fantastic, and I want to shout out to them because they do such an amazing job to keep the trails with the amount of snow that we do get. You know, it kind of ebbs and flows with the quality of snow.
And it's not just trail grooming. It's also getting those trails ready in the fall and making sure
absolutely.
They're clear. It's not about the snow. As I learned in Ryan's book, it's a very labor intensive.
Yeah, it is. It is. My father's now retired, and he does a lot in the Hickory Ridge trail system area for like single track and ski trails. And just over Christmas, we did a father-son trip with the dogs to walk the trails and pick up sticks. So when the snow did fall, then the groomer wouldn't pull up leaves and other debris. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's a great, a really great story. Lane, thank you so much for calling in. Happy trails. Happy skiing.
All right. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Ryan, I want to ask you about the grooming, because ski race organizers used to groom trails by dragging a mattress behind a snowmobile. Can you explain how these trails were set?
Oh, yeah. I mean, trail grooming has evolved a great deal. Back, 80 years ago, 60 years ago, the trails might not be groomed at all. The skiers would just forge their own way. But like the early citizens races, the early Berkeys and the Mora Vasilopa, for the Vasilopa, they would use old mattresses, and they use these things called hog panels, which are basically these heavy gauge wire panels, just something to compact the snow. I mean, it's a far cry from the sophisticated equipment used today.
Okay, here's what I want to know, though. Blueberry soup. Mora Vasilopa, tell us, what is this tradition about with the blueberry soup and giving out blueberry soup at the end of the race?
I wish I knew more about that. I know it's a thing, and I
it is a total thing.
I'm sure it comes from Norway.
I talked
to an old skier in Duluth, a former Olympian, and he talked about when he was a kid watching ski races, and he would see these skiers, and they'd be spattered with what he thought was blood, and he thought it must be some horrible ordeal they were going through out there, and it turns out it was spilled blueberry soup.
Oh my goodness. Yes. I mean, some of the traditions, and you've skied the Berkey. Can you tell us what's it like for you?
Yeah, I skied the Berkey. I'd skated it three times, in the early 2000s, and then I'm not much of a ski racer. I like to ski, but I'm not very fast. I just like to chug along. But then while talking to these diehard skiers for the book, I decided I was going to ski it again, and I was going to do it classic. And I'd never done much classic skiing on a trail. And, it's a heck of a lot slower, but I mean, you go out on the Berkey and there are these massive crowds and there's so much energy that the massive hills they go by pretty quickly.
All the energy from the crowds that really kind of helps carry you through the race and keep you going.
Definitely.
The book is called Winter's Children, author Ryan Rogers, taking us through the Nordic skiing rise and fall in the Midwest. Are you a classic skier or a skate skier? Are you a birch legger or an uber legger skiing 20 or 30 or more Berkey ski races? Tell us about what keeps you going back. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Ryan Rogers here on the Ideas Network.
Rappresenta gli Stati Uniti d'America, Jesse Dickinson.
That is Minnesota's star cross-country skier, the Stillwater High School powerhouse turned Olympic gold medalist, Jesse Dickinson, making history 1 year ago, claiming enough points to take the top spot in the Tour de Ski, headed into Beijing. She explains to NBC here why she collapses at the end of a race.
You're so exhausted. Usually I can't feel part of or most of my legs. It feels like your lungs are on fire. I don't necessarily want to be in pain. Like, I'm not totally crazy, a little bit crazy, not totally crazy.
Are you crazy for Nordic skiing? Little bit. How hard do you push yourself on the trails? Are you a woman or person of color? Have you faced barriers in getting involved in the sport? 800-642-1234. Ryan Rogers, new book on the history of Nordic skiing in the Midwest, and with us for about 11 more minutes. Ryan, Jesse Dickinson. Oh my goodness. What has she done for the sport, and especially, getting that Olympic profile with that gold medal?
Well, I mean, the U.S. has been competing in the Olympics in Nordic ski events for almost 100 years, since 1924. And she was the first person to win a gold medal in all that time. So, I mean, it's huge.
I got really emotional in your book when I think it was Bonnie Fuller who said her high school girls didn't understand that racing wasn't always open to girls. They didn't really appreciate that they didn't really understand Title IX. And I felt like I was one of those high schoolers who took racing for granted. I didn't realize that my coach, who was awesome and strong, she didn't have the opportunity to race in high school like I did. What was that like for girls who wanted to race? And when did girl cross-country ski teams really start heavily to race?
I mean, really up until the 1970s, there wasn't much for girls cross-country racing. Bonnie Fuller Cask was a high school student in the late 1960s, and her brother was on the ski team, and she really wanted to be on the ski team, but she was not allowed to. And some days the coach would let her take the bus to practice, but other days he would decide not. And she would ask if she could ski before the races and just get a time to see how she ranked. And sometimes they would let her, and it didn't count for anything. And some of the coaches would yell at her to get off the course. I mean, and this was in the late 1960s, not all that long ago. But it wasn't until the early 1970s when a high school student named Tony St. Pierre sued the Minnesota State High School League so she could join the cross-country running and ski team. And shortly after she won her case in federal court, Nixon signed Title IX.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Joe in Eau Claire, who wants to mention a skier. Joe, hi. Who's on your mind?
Hi. I thought we should mention Carl Andreessen, excuse me, in this discussion. Carl was a Norwegian, grew up in Norway, actually during the Nazi occupation, married an American woman, and ended up in Eau Claire, where he was a professor of political science. And he went to he wanted to cross-country ski, of course, but he couldn't find any skis. Everything in the sports department was downhill skis, so he got a hold of some skis somehow, started a ski club here, which still continues, the Eau Claire Ski Striders. He was the founder of the Berkey Binder. He wore the number one on his bib. Carl has since passed, but he introduced the sport here. Part of his legacy is that there is a youth instruction program called the Kickin' Kids, and we just had a meeting of the volunteer coaches a couple nights ago, and there are 175 kids signed up. So,
wow, excellent.
And they have grown, too, into a middle school and high school competitive cross-country ski team. But, 175 little folks who will be learning to ski or advancing their skills. So, And Carl spoke with a very heavy Norwegian accent all his life. He was quite the character.
Ryan, anything to add there about his character?
Oh, that's a great story. I'm not familiar with that man, but it him looking for cross-country skis reminded me of other stories I heard from skiers in the 50s and 1960s. They'd go into ski shops and they'd ask for cross-country skis, and the ski salespeople wouldn't know what they were talking about. If it wasn't a downhill ski, what the heck was it?
I want to mention Martin Strand, who of Superior, saw a business opportunity for a ski factory, and then had his couple businesses, I think, ski factories burned to the ground in the Twin Cities, and then here comes New Richmond, Wisconsin, courts him, and it just reminded me of a modern economic development package. New Richmond has the lumber, the timber, the land, the rail. They're going to build him a building, and and he goes there and opens this factory. What did Martin Strand do for skis, wooden skis?
Oh, Strand was a really interesting guy, a native Norwegian. He immigrated to the U.S. He didn't have anything going for him. He didn't speak English. He didn't have any money. But he had family in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, and so they set him up. And he was thriving as a surveyor, and he moved up to Superior, Wisconsin. He was surveying the lines for the loggers as they as they logged northern Wisconsin. Then the Panic of 1893 happened, which also killed the early ski league, and he found himself back in the Twin Cities, and he was scrambling to make some money, and he observed these boys skiing on these awful skis made out of barrel staves. And so he decided he was going to start making skis. And he had two factories burned down in the Twin Cities. And then, as you mentioned, New Richmond, Wisconsin, which is just 40 miles away, they offered to build him a nice fire-resistant concrete factory. And then they put $6,000 into that. They're the biggest employer in New Richmond was going out of business. So they needed a new employer in town, and it worked out well. Strand was there from, I think it was 1911 until the late 1940s, turning out skis. He was the biggest producer of skis in the world for a while.
And I want to pause here to say, if anyone in New Richmond is listening and can add to the story of the Strand Ski Factory, call in now, 800-642-1234. Jack, now in Madison, is with us. Hi, Jack.
Hi there.
Hi, what would you like to bring up?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I was going to say, kind of similarly to what some of the previous callers have mentioned, at time, my family and I have had some neighbors from Denmark that we would go skiing with up north. And I remember, you know, both my parents, but especially my dad, still being new to skiing. This was when I was real little. And I just remember we were hitting the trails. And, you know, while our Danish neighbors were sort of gliding, you know, perfectly as skiers over the fallen snow, my dad was kind of wobbling and hobbling along. I know that the adults took turns holding me when I was real little, and I think the dad of the neighbor said, "Joe, if you stop wobbling soon, I'm not sure you'll be able to go much further on the skis," but, or something like that. And it was just, like, he was really, you know, kind and understanding about it, but just fact that, you know, they, you know, where they grew up, you know, skiing is quite commonplace, and, you know, my dad was still new to it. And so I just think it's great when you are able to learn from people who really are such excellent skiers, and it makes you feel a little less bad about being new to the sport yourself. But that's the
passing it on to the next generation. And we're running short on time here, Jack, but I want Ryan to respond on that about the future of the sport and how do you pass it on, especially as our climate is changing.
Well, more and more venues are making snow, so we have that going for us. You know, artificial snow can be made at night and withstand warm days. So, I mean, competitively, cross-country skiing is on the rise. I don't think it's going anywhere. Young American skiers are really fast. They're really good. They're, I think, more competitive internationally than they've probably ever been. But sort of the wood skiing, you know, the old style skiing is what is more at risk. I mean, you know, 3 weeks ago up here in Duluth, I was bemoaning the lack of snow, but now we're just, you know, now we're just covered with it. We just got clobbered, and it's great, and I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts. But,
oh, Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Ryan Rogers, writer, avid skier in Duluth, and his new book is called Winter's Children, A Celebration of Nordic Skiing. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.